Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Let's get a couple of things out of the way right up front. We don't know. Ben Bernanke doesn't know. Wall Street doesn't know. Nobody knows exactly why what happened yesterday happened. But we've got some really good theories. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices, calvert.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you with us on this day after. It's Wednesday today, the last day of February. The Fed chairman couldn't have timed it better if he'd tried. Mr. Bernanke had a previously scheduled appointment on Capitol Hill today with the House Budget Committee. Just so happened to be the day everybody was looking for some reassurance about the stock market. See if this does it for you.
I don't think it would be useful for me to try to parse the movement into the components associated with different pieces of news or pieces of information.
Sounds like his best Alan Greenspan impression, if you ask me. But the current chairman eventually fessed up that it's going to take a while to sort out exactly what did happen.
There didn't seem to be any single trigger of the market correction we saw yesterday.
By the time the opening bell rang this morning, there were already two big economic reports out that would have hit investors hard on any other day. The first was an update of fourth quarter gross domestic product. Economic growth was cut from 3.5% to 2.2%. But the head of the central bank said he and his colleagues aren't all that worried.
The downward revision of the fourth quarter GDP numbers we got this morning is actually more consistent with our overall view of the economy than were the original numbers.
We got economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial on the phone to dig deeper into that number and whether there might be a silver lining in there someplace.
The good news is that more than half of the revision came from a drop in inventories, and that's a good thing. When companies go through an inventory correction like they did in the fourth quarter, then the odds are that growth will actually pick up a bit once that inventory correction ends.
The other big number of the day was yet another sign housing's far from done dropping. January new home sales were off 17% because what's on the market isn't selling. Here's Chris Lowe again.
We are selling new homes at a pace of less than a million a year. We have inventories of about 4.5 million. So it's going to take a long time to burn through that huge inventory bulge. And as long as we're still working on inventories, prices are going to drop.
With all that in mind, Marketplace's Bob Moon brings us full circle back to Wall Street and why today didn't go horribly wrong.
While the Fed chief was accentuating the positive on Capitol Hill, analysts and investors all seem to be singing a similar theme on Wall Street.
The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
When you look at the fundamentals, the earnings, the outlook for the economy, the Federal Reserve stance, nothing much changed.
Wachovia Securities consulting analyst Larry Wachtell is one of many Wall Street observers who keep pointing again and again at the fundamentals. And out of the clouds of yesterday's apparently passing storm, the emerging consensus today was the underpinnings of the economy are sturdy. Even though most Asian and European markets remained weak, analysts suggest they were just correcting for yesterday's Wall Street slide. And never mind that economic growth wasn't as strong as first believed or that new home sales keep falling, Wachtell says simply, "Tell me something I don't know."
Frankly, the revision downward in GDP had been long expected, and housing continues to flounder. So it wasn't like the street was taken aback by these numbers.
Nor did they sway those who still see prospective economic growth. Market strategists at no fewer than three big investment houses, UBS, Merrill Lynch, and Citigroup, are recommending investors keep buying stocks. Although on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange today, Seaport Securities broker Ted Weisberg was counseling caution.
I think we would say to investors that, as always, do your homework and look for your entry points. And I would basically keep my powder dry for a couple of more days just to see if we're out of the woods or not.
But he also says don't wait too long, or you could miss some good bargains amid yesterday's ruins. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
What would have been average gains any other day looked really nice today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Notwithstanding the stock market's bumpy ride the past couple of days, there's plenty of evidence the U.S. economy overall is less volatile than it used to be. Recessions aren't as deep, peaks aren't as high, but the same can't really be said for individual workers. Wages have become more unstable, rising and dropping from one year to the next. It's called wage volatility, and Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports Congress has added it to the list of things to do.
Of the 4 million Americans laid off between 2003 and 2005, half took a pay cut in their next job. Senator Charles Schumer, a Democrat from New York, says a lot of workers feel the financial ground shifting beneath their feet.
And if the recession in the manufacturing sector that hit our radar screens this week spreads throughout our economy, the economic roller coaster for families will only get worse.
Senator Schumer is preparing a bill to expand federal wage insurance for displaced workers who take a pay cut in their next job. To cushion the salary loss, wage insurance would likely pay a worker 50% of the difference between the old and new salaries, probably for 2 years, although the details are still being worked out. Even if the payment is capped at $10,000 per worker, the annual cost would be more than $4 billion. That's steep, even for unions and some Democrats like Carolyn Maloney, a House member from New York. She worries wage insurance would siphon money away from existing benefits.
Wage insurance may well have a role to play, but implementing it should not come at the expense of shoring up the unemployment insurance system or trade adjustment assistance, both of which are in dire need of reform.
Unions also believe wage insurance would give laid-off workers incentives to take inferior jobs at lower salaries. Instead, they favor improving the federal-state unemployment insurance safety net and beefing up training programs for workers whose jobs have been outsourced. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The House is set to vote tomorrow on a bill that would make it easier for unions to organize. Business groups have put together one of their biggest lobbying efforts in years to defeat the bill. Labor groups are just as determined to get it passed. More now from Nancy Marshall Genzer.
The fight is over a bill that says workers can unionize quickly just by signing cards. Right now, employers can require a secret election, which takes months. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is leading a million-dollar campaign against the legislation with radio ads like this one, warning of what it says are the bill's dire consequences.
The right to vote, the right to privacy, these are all at risk.
The ads encourage voters to pressure Congress to vote against the bill. The chamber's Michael Eastman says the campaign has produced tens of thousands of emails and letters to Capitol Hill.
Based on the amount of response we're getting from our members and from other interested parties, I think we're certainly on that pace to be one of our biggest battles.
In fact, this fight could be bigger than the campaign for President Bush's tax cuts in 2001. The Chamber of Commerce is facing off against a 500,000 union activists. Bill Samuel of the AFL-CIO says they're also swarming Capitol Hill.
They're really the nuts and bolts of getting a bill passed in Congress is wearing out a lot of shoe leather. So we're visiting members of Congress, calling them and writing them.
The bill is expected to pass the House, but not the Senate. Still, University of Pittsburgh business professor Merrick Masters says business groups want to set the tone for the future.
You know, there's sometimes you want to make certain something's dead. You want to beat this legislation down until it doesn't have another breath in it.
Unions say the bill will live to fight another day. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Elsewhere on the Hill today, it was all radio all the time, or maybe it's better called all antitrust all the time. The newly formed House Antitrust Task Force took up the proposed merger between XM and Sirius, the two satellite broadcasters. They announced last Monday that Sirius plans to buy XM in a $13 billion deal. Opponents say consumers will inevitably lose out when there's only one company left standing. Sirius CEO Mel Karmazin tried to smooth the waters at that task force hearing.
I'm telling you today that we are committed. We are committed to not raising prices and committed to, in fact, lowering the price.
It's fair to say Karmazin's got an uphill fight on his hands. The deal still has to clear the Federal Communications Commission and the Department of Justice. The European plane maker Airbus has confirmed it will cut 10,000 jobs over the next 4 years. The company's been forced into a painful restructuring by cost overruns based on its new super jumbo A380. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports unions are promising to fight those cuts.
Airbus says the cuts are vital. The super jumbo is 2 years late and way over budget. The weak dollar has also put the company under pressure, making Airbus planes more expensive and Boeing's cheaper. Today's announcement was long delayed. France and Germany had quarrelled over who would bear most of the job losses. As it turned out, French factories were worse hit. The company's boss, Louis Gallois, said this national bickering has to stop.
National conflicts are poison for Airbus. We have to be careful not to be more interested with national interest than to the future of Airbus.
That future still looks rocky. Airbus unions are threatening strike action if the job cuts go ahead. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Iraqi cabinet approved a draft oil law earlier this week. Nothing set in stone yet. The full parliament has to vote. But the law is seen as a crucial first step in deciding how to divvy up Iraq's most critical natural resource and the billions of dollars the country stands to make from selling it. Economist and commentator Susan Lee offers this suggestion.
Sharing oil revenue sounds like a great way to sow peace among Kurds, Sunnis, and Shias. But the devil is in the details. Let's not forget what happens when governments get their mitts on oil money. It's called the curse of oil, and it produces a spectacular amount of corruption, graft, and waste. The new Iraqi plan is an oil curse just waiting to happen. So now is the perfect moment for Iraq to create something like the Alaska Permanent Fund. Just listen. The state of Alaska takes a quarter of the money it makes on oil leases and royalties and puts it in an investment portfolio. This portfolio then pays a dividend each year to every Alaskan citizen. Alaska set up this fund 30 years ago, and today it's got $36 billion in assets. Last year, the dividend was over $1,100 for every adult and child. Replicating this fund in Iraq would be very, very attractive for lots of reasons. Most of all, it's a nifty way to contain the government's opportunities to stick its hands in the cookie jar. Also, since Iraqi citizens would profit directly, they would all have an incentive to make sure the oil industry runs efficiently and honestly, which is no small matter for Iraq. The Iraq Study Group estimated that $11 billion a year was being stolen from the oil industry. In Alaska, the fund runs a tip hotline to combat fraud. Last year, it recovered almost $3 million from fraudulent dividend claims. And here's a big bonus. An oil fund for Iraq would produce a fabulous across-the-board injection of consumer spending for the economy. An Alaska-style fund for Iraq is an unequivocal winner, hands down.
Economist Susan Lee lives in New York City. If you've got some thoughts to share with us, head to our homepage. It's marketplace.org.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter.
I'm not gonna name names here, but a lot of the letters we get are sent from office email addresses. Makes sense, given that many of us spend at least a third of our day at the office. We did a story this month on the workplace of the future, where cubicle walls are low and there's plenty of room to roam around. The idea is to increase productivity by making the workplace feel more like home. Will Severidge from Portland, Oregon says sometimes an office ought to just be an office.
Modern offices may feel more friendly with their low cubicle walls and collaboration spaces, but for the right employee, this setup is in fact an invitation to socialize. Low cubicle walls make it okay to tell everyone in the office at once exactly what you ate for dinner.
Whether they're high or low, cubicle walls have become a popular place to post family photos and vacation memorabilia. Not so, though, for commentator Lucy Kellaway. Earlier this month, she explained why you'll never see pictures of her kids where she works. She likes to keep office and home apart. Natalie Law from Atlanta, Georgia, disagrees.
Looking at my schedule of symphony concerts or the conservation photography on my cubicle walls reminds me that work is not the summation of my life, that before and after is when I do the majority of my living.
Life was supposed to be getting better in Zambia. Debt relief had put that country on the path to economic recovery. But before all the debt was forgiven, an American businessman bought a slice of it. He sued the Zambian government for the balance due plus interest. Our report laid out what might happen to the Zambian economy if the country has to pony up all the cash, $55 million. Nothing good, to be brief. Gary Davidson from Santa Monica, California, says he's appalled at the blatant profiteering.
Your report on the fund that bought Zambia's debt has me furious. I think calling them vulture funds is too nice. Shame on them for profiteering from others' hardships.
Finally, a clarification. We told you a couple of weeks ago House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer had invited lobbyists to support his political action committee at a fundraiser in Puerto Rico, and that Hoyer had booked 137 rooms at a posh golf resort and casino for the event. Turns out that number counted rooms booked for more than one night more than once. Representative Hoyer's staff won't say exactly how many lobbyists will pay to go golfing with the congressman, only that it's more than 60. Send us your comments by going to our website. It's marketplace.org. Click on the link that says contact. Coming up, one worker's story.
I work on the furnaces for arsenic and copper. I work on the furnaces for lead. These are the most polluted parts of the smelter.
But first, let's do the numbers. After a shaky morning, the Fed chief came to the market's rescue. The Dow Industrials hopped up 52 points today, 0.4% to end the day at 12,268. The Nasdaq skipped up 8 points, 0.3% to close at 2416. The S&P 500 jumped 7 points, that's 0.5%. Finished at 1406. Yesterday's crash had investors pouring money into industries that don't always go the way the economy blows. Telecom stocks rang in the profits. Sprint and Nextel dialed up 4.6%. Verizon jumped 2%. Healthcare was also aglow. Merck rose 2.25%. Procter & Gamble plumped up 3.75%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.57%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Want to know what's in the works at Marketplace? How about getting the latest news and features in an email? Sign up for the Marketplace Midday Update. It will keep you up to date on the day's business news and let you know what to expect on our next program. Go to marketplace.org and click on the newsletter link on the right.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on personal income and spending for January. In Detroit, automakers release sales figures for February. And it's a great day to go bar hopping if you're in Reykjavik. Iceland celebrates Beer Day, an annual event since 1989 when a 75-year-long prohibition of beer was lifted. Sounds like an opportunity to make up for lost time. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. We might be living in the Silicon Age, but look inside your computer and you'll see plenty of good old-fashioned metal. Not just there, but in the cables that bring the electricity to your house and in the battery in your car. And before it winds up in that ring on your finger, every ounce of that metal has to be transformed from rock to ore, eventually to purified product. Today, our series Working, looking at the life of a single worker in the global economy, continues. John Miller takes us 12,000 feet up into the Peruvian Andes to one of the biggest metal processing plants in the world.
Mi nombre es Pedro Córdoba Valdivieso. Tengo 47 años, voy para los 48 años de edad. Yo nací en el departamento de Junín.
Pedro Córdoba was born 47 years ago into a family of master weavers.
His village was famous for its ponchos and blankets.
Las gorras, las mantas, los ponchos.
But life, in his words, was chaotic. It was hard to make money. He'd worked his way through high school. He was ambitious and serious and smart. So at 21, he left to seek his fortune here at the enormous smelter in the town of La Arroya. Picture a long, narrow valley in a moonscape of ghostly white hills. Down at the bottom, a sprawling, patched-together factory, acres and acres of buildings and yards with a giant smokestack rising from the middle. Around the factory, a tangle of noisy streets and makeshift markets, all covered in a fine gray dust. The exhaust from the smelter bites at your eyes. The roar of machinery is constant. Freight trains rumble through day and night. It's almost like a caricature of a factory town.
Bueno, mi trabajo es mecánico, mantenimiento mecánico.
I work as a mechanic. I do general maintenance of the machines. We're like nomads. They call us wherever there's work.
Nos llaman donde hay trabajo.
The plant where Pedro Cordova works processes gold and silver, copper and lead, in all about 20 different metals, more than any other metallurgical complex on Earth. Mines from as far away as Canada send big blocks of ore here to be pulverized and toasted with arsenic or sulfuric acid.
Hay zarandas donde tenemos que zarandear, donde tenemos que sacar.
There are sifters where we sift the minerals to make a sort of powder to send to the ovens.
Las chancadoras son máquinas gigantes.
The crushers are also giant machines that take big rocks and turn them into pebbles. I work on the furnaces for arsenic and copper. I work on the furnaces for lead. These are the most polluted parts of the smelter.
And he's feeling the effects. Cordova used to be an athlete. Now he can barely get through the day.
Le soy muy honesto, no estoy muy feliz con el trabajo.
To be honest with you, I'm not happy with the work. The discomfort, the pollution, no one could be happy with that.
Entonces creo que ningún ser humano puede estar tranquilo.
Recently, Cordova was issued a high-tech respirator. It looks like a cross between scuba gear and a gas mask. It's one of several improvements made by the American company Doe Run that bought the plant in 1997. In the company health clinic, Dr. Roberto Ramos leafs through graphs of lead and arsenic levels in the workers' blood. He says things are getting better. But the smelter's been here for more than 80 years, and you don't erase the effects of that overnight.
Doran Perú llega el 97, el 98, y se encuentra con el problema del plomo alto.
Doran got hit in 1997, 98, and saw the problem with high levels of lead among the workers. So we started to work on it and solve the problem.
Aspiramos a...
In the next few years, we hope to achieve the same results as the Doe Run plant in the United States.
Pedro Cordova says conditions have improved for workers, but he says the company hasn't done nearly enough to reduce its impact on the people who live outside, especially here in the shanty town above his house. On cool mornings, exhaust from the plant sits here like fog, full of sulfuric acid, arsenic, cadmium, and lead. It burns holes in the shack's steel roofs. Studies show that nearly every child under the age of 6 here is technically poisoned.
Eso no es justo. Eso no es justo, señor.
That isn't fair, sir. That isn't fair.
Not in a town that generates tens of millions of dollars in profits for the company.
La Arroya es un mendigo sentado en un banco de oro.
La Arroya is a beggar sitting on a golden bench.
Cordova says if the company can't reduce emissions, it should pay for the townsfolk to relocate. That's what Doe Run agreed to do at its other smelter in Missouri after a bitter fight with the state. Cordova knows just what he'd do with the money.
Ya me iría pues a otro lugar donde podría dedicarme a una agricultura.
I'd go to some place where I could farm, where green things grow. As you can see, nothing grows around here.
But Pedro Cordova is one of the few people in La Arroya willing to criticize the company, at least in public. When foreign medical workers came here to take blood tests, townspeople pelted them with stones and eggs. Even labor leaders say if they complain too much, the company may leave, and then where would La Arroya be? Pedro Cordova has his own worries. On a local holiday, I sit with him and his wife, Rosabel, in the concrete house they built just a stone's throw from the smelter. I ask Rosabelle how her husband's work has affected his health.
Los pulmones, el sueño, el cansancio tiene.
It's in his lungs. He can't sleep. He's always tired. He gets headaches. He has rashes on his skin. He doesn't hear well anymore.
And it's all been getting worse, so he finally went to get tests. The doctors found that he has pneumoconiosis. It's a lung disease that comes from years of inhaling stone dust. There is no cure. I ask Rosabelle how the family's taking the news.
It's bad, really bad. We are totally preoccupied. As a family, we have a right to be worried.
If Rosabelle is worried, Pedro is mad. You can see it in his eyes, hear it in his voice.
Estoy ya sentenciado a una muerte. Por eso yo declaro hoy día.
I've been sentenced to death. And that's why I'm declaring today, and I'm not afraid to talk about this to anyone.
No voy a esperar todavía estar muerto.
I'm not going to wait until I die to get what I deserve. I know two people who have died of cancer already.
¿Acaso voy a todavía esperar estar en el cementerio para demandar?
Do we have to be in the cemetery before we can complain?
There's a postscript to this story. Cordova told me with nothing left to lose, he'd decided to run for city council to challenge the government and the company to clean things up. When I called later to find out how he'd done, his wife Rosabelle told me he'd lost, and his symptoms are getting worse. But with a son in medical school and a daughter who also wants to be a doctor, he can't afford to leave La Arroya, even if it kills him.
That was John Miller in Peru for our series, Working. It's a co-production of Marketplace and Homelands Productions. We've got more, including some pictures of Pedro Cordova, on our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by the Speaking of Faith book tour in Washington, D.C., March 9th. More on when Krista Tippett will be in your city at speakingoffaith.org. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note for all you college students out there suspected of downloading music illegally, or for their parents who might have to cough up fines and penalties. Don't stress, the music industry is going to cut you a break. Kind of. The Recording Industry Association of America said today it'll offer a chance to settle before they sue you. Letters are going out to about 400 computer users at 13 universities offering the deals. Hundreds of them, those letters that is, will be mailed every month. No word on the dollar amounts being talked about. But kids, and you know who you are, you might want to check your mailbox every now and then. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow bounced back 52 points, 0.4%. The NASDAQ rose 8 points, about a third of 1%. The S&P 500 picked up 7 points, 0.5%. Our engineers include Ravi Karman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Eric Johnson, and Joel Stein. Next time, the Venezuelan economy in a race against inflation.
This discontent is brewing, but it hasn't been channeled yet. You know, there's a potential for some kind of an explosion because people are getting fed up.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.